Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Hey everyone, thanks for joining me again today. Today, I am sharing another Paso Zoom hangout with you, put on by the Paso Robles Wine Alliance. There are so many things that I love about Paso. Yes, the wines are phenomenal, and there is so much to do beyond just wine tasting. But it is the people that truly make the place special. Where else can you talk about the correlation of wine and surfing than right here in Paso? Listen in as Josh Beckett of Peachy Canyon Winery, Philip Funder of Law Estate Wines, and Patrick Moran of Niner Wine Estates join Christopher Toronto of the Paso Robles Wine Alliance. They discuss how the art and science of surfing aligns with the art and science of winemaking. If you would like to find other Paso hangouts to listen to or watch live, head to PasoWine.com, the best place to explore Paso Robles. While you are listening, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review, and tell your friends to listen to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast. So unscrew, uncork, or savor that bottle, and let's talk surfing and winemaking.
Welcome, everyone, to another one of our Paso Wine Hangouts. So thanks so much for joining us. So many of you have been joining us over this time period, and we really appreciate it. Maybe some of you are new to it, and welcome. This is basically a hangout. We have a we kind of day drink. We have a glass of wine. We talk about a subject. It's loosely tied to Paso wine and Paso wine making. Sometimes it's entirely tied to it. Today is one of the former. Today we're going to be talking about how the art and kind of science, if you will, of surfing kind of matches up to the art science of winemaking. I've got three winemakers on who are surfers. Sounds like most of us got to surf this morning, maybe. We are going to talk a little bit about that. What's the correlation? How does that work? We've got Josh Beckett from Peachy Canyon Winery. We've got Philip Under from Lot Wine Estate Wines and Patrick Moran from Niner Wine Estates. I want to first and very briefly introduce them. Well, I have introduced them, I should say. First, let them introduce themselves and their brands a little bit about themselves, and then we'll kind of get right back into the topic. So, Josh, I'd like to start with you.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining. Josh Beckett, Peachy Canyon Winery. Family-owned, second-generation brand. Peachy Canyon started in 1988, a little winery called Tobias before that, and historically been kind of a focus on red Zinfandel. Today I'm sharing with the boys a little GSM, a little dry farm estate GSM, which is kind of cool. We're definitely going to be changing up some of the portfolio as my brother and I, second generation, come on. But yeah, welcome everybody. Raised the Central Coast, surf the Central Coast all my whole life. As you say, Patrick, though, I'm holding out to never surf the reefs. I'll be sticking to it now that I've waited this long. So, but
yeah, well,
thanks.
I'll drag you down. There.
Pat, why don't you go next, bud?
Yeah, so Patrick Moran, winemaker at Niner Wine Estates. Niner Wine Estates is Robles there, family-owned and operated, second generation as well, with Andy Niner at the helm. We have three estate vineyards, two in Paso Robles and one in Edna Valley. Focus on Bordeaux varieties, but we also make Pinot Noir and Chardonnay from the Edna Valley, amongst others. Yeah, we have a nice outfit, been there, like I said, 10 years, and it's a great family to work for and be a part of.
You're saying that because Andy's watching, right?
No, this is my script. Just given by our PR team, you know. No, it's awesome. You know, like I said, how can you complain? I went surfing this morning, went to work, worked for a while, now I'm socializing, talking about two of my favorite things. So
yeah, Philip, you're up next.
Hi, I'm Philip. I'm the winemaker at Law Estate. First generation, Don and Susie Law are the owners, but we're on the western hills of Paso Robles, one of the highest elevated vineyards in the area, I think second only to Dow. Our highest blocks are right around 1,900 feet. It's all estate grown, all organically farmed, and philosophy in the winery for me is pretty similar to that. I don't use any yeast, anything like that. It's all completely native ferments, and I think we've got such an incredible terroir and you know, hillside and these vineyards that we all have on the western side of Paso Robles that I just really want to express what's there without messing with it too much. And yeah, it's a beautiful place. I've been here since 2016 and looking forward to many, many more years. So
like I said, we're doing this topic about how surfing and wine kind of blend in a way, or how they might influence each other, as these guys are all surfers and winemakers. And honestly, it's kind of a grasp, right? I mean, maybe let's admit it. I just felt like having a chat about surfing while on the clock. But in actuality, though, it does become kind of part of you. It influences a lot of maybe your critical thinking and how you approach challenges, maybe even some creative solutions or some original ideas. And so that's where I think it probably does kind of come into play in what it is that you do as a winemaker. And that's why I've encouraged these guys to come on today and talk about it, a little bit about it. We also have a few wines that we're tasting of each other's, of course. And so really quickly, I want to share that up. So we've got the Peachy Canyon GSM. Philip, the Law. What are we drinking from Law?
That's Aspire. So that is a blend of 86% Syrah and 14% Grenache. And the first vintage of it. So that was my first vintage at Law, 2016. And came up with the idea of creating that wine because we had an incredible yield from some of our Syrah blocks in 16. So we just had this extra Syrah basically. And didn't want to, we were trying to find a home for it in our existing blends. When Scott Hawley and I were blending, and Scott was the head winemaker here at Law back then in 2016, and it just, you know, all the other SKUs didn't look like themselves with extra Syrah in them. So we thought, hey, let's, you know, why don't we make the counterpart to a wine that we already make, which is Beguiling, which is 85-15 Grenache and Syrah, roughly. Every year, you know, those percentages change a little bit. But yeah, ended up blending it out and trying it out, and absolutely loved it. The critics have loved it. You know, we've got some pretty amazing scores on that wine for our first vintage of it. So it's here to stay. I'm making it every year from now on. So
cool. Well, okay, so you're talking. Let's talk a little bit about the topic. Let's go with you.
Yeah.
So just so everyone knows, Philip and I had a surf this morning.
Yeah.
Kind of fun. We talked a little bit, but, you know, but I do want to start with you, though, to say, I mean, how are you finding? You're newest here. You're new to the Central Coast. How is this Central Coast, this surfing experience, helping you as you are starting to kind of create your wines and your vision of what Paso is?
Yeah, well, I think surfing kind of helps me personally and on a professional level in a lot of ways. Surfing, we all know this, for us as surfers, it's much more than a sport. It's a lifestyle. It's what you do. It's what you think about when you wake up in the morning. And it's truly, it becomes a part of you. You take surfing away from me, pretty sure I would wither away and die. But as far as winemaking goes, I think the biggest connection for me is the fact that I kind of approach a vintage or a wine or the whole process of making wine similarly to surfing, in the sense that every wave's going to be different. I mean, even if you're sitting on the most mechanical of Indonesian reef breaks, they're not all identical. You know, you have to approach every wave with as pretty much a completely blank slate. It's an white canvas, and the lines that you draw on that wave, you know, what you feel is the right thing to do at the moment. And I feel like winemaking is very similar in that sense, because I approach every single vintage as a completely blank slate and a white canvas. it's never going to be exactly the same as the vintage before or the vintage that's to follow. So approaching it in that way, I think really helps. I think surfing forces you to live in the present, in the now. You have to react to the environment. You have to react to the ocean because that's our playing field. It's ever changing. And it's similar in winemaking. You've got a vintage that will never be the same. You know, Syrah might look different in 16 than it does in 17 and 18, and it comes off at different times. So I think just the fact that surfing teaches you to live in the moment really helps with winemaking, because in order to make great wine, you have to live in that moment and you have to make those decisions right then. You can't, there's no formula. There's no recipe, you know? So I think that's really how surfing helps me the most when it comes to winemaking.
Josh and Pat, you guys are totally nodding like in agreement. Like,
no, that's good stuff. I mean, that's a great formulation. Because, and just like, Philip, I spent some time out this morning, and I was thinking about this question, and was like, okay, where are the parallels? What's the overlap? And I was considering it both from a scientific, you know, state, like, okay, you got surfing, you have the science of surfing. Like, we looked all at the tide, swell direction, the wind direction, you know, temperature, got wetsuit choices, you know, everything, booty choices, whatnot. You know, so we kind of think of do the calculation on all of the natural influences and stuff like that. And there's a science to it. And you can go to the science of surfboards and rocker and, you know, fin selection and everything else. And likewise, wine has, you know, that foundational aspect of science. It grounds you into the facts. But then you have the art form of it, and that's where it becomes fluid. That's where it becomes creative. Like Phil was saying, you know, in surfing, like, you are in the moment. Like, you're not thinking about other things as you're taking off on a wave. Like, you're not thinking about your honeydew list or anything like that. You're kind of going, all right, I'm going. And you have to dance. You have to be right there. If you're not, like, you're going to miss that step. And so, you know, living in the moment is certainly one of them. In winemaking, it is the same way. You have to be fluid. Things are coming at you so fast, both in surfing and in winemaking, certainly during harvest. You know, you're trying to do calculus on so many things that are coming at you quick. You do have to kind of dance with it, as opposed to, like, you know, a microprocessor and do all the calculations instantly. It's a little more fluid at times. So I think it's
okay. So I was texting with Josh this morning pretty early. It was like 5:45. I left my house, and I think I had already got a text from him. It was like, how's it looking? And I'm like, oh, I was running a little late. And then he's like, well, I don't know if I'll make it, because I got to get a crew over to Kyler. And so at the same time that surfing has this influence maybe in that winemaking, surfing and winemaking don't really actually go together. You got to be up early for both, typically, right? I mean, there's so many of these factors that end up taking you, if anything, away from it. And I don't know, Josh, you didn't end up getting in the water this morning, but did you make it to that crew?
I got pulled away. I didn't get to. And, you know, and going to, you know, spinning off even more of what you said, like, our best season is our best season during, you know, it's harvest time. Yeah. So that, I think the hardest part is when you know, because when the winery starts and the fruit starts and the ferment start, you know, it's go time.
Yeah, you're there.
You know it's good, but you're like, yeah, but it's not happening.
Yeah.
But it, you know, that is what it is. But that's a good part. That's our world here on the Central Coast. And there's a lot of wine regions around the world that are the best surf regions as well, which, you know, from Australia to Europe to, you know, South Africa, which just makes it really special. But, and then you even fine tune it, you know, when I was thinking about it today and this morning when I wasn't surfing, as I drove by and came over the hill, and, you know, you start to even take it even further from what Philip and Patrick said, even spin it off into the vineyards. Like, I got pulled to the vineyard this morning, but that's kind of, I was thinking, you can, you know, we correlate our kind of go-to vineyards or our go-to blocks within vineyards to specialty surf spots. Like, I know this surf spot, that what it's going to do, what it's going to provide to me, kind of on a day-to-day basis, my go-to place, kind of like a certain vineyard or a certain block within a vineyard. Like, I know I can really count on this, but then there's those kind of misto sites, like, or a vineyard that you're maybe going to try and don't really know it, but I want to get out there and give it a taste or put, you know, tip my toe in the water. And you might try that fruit for a season. I'm like, it didn't work. Or, oh yeah, I'm stoked on it. I can't wait for that to happen again. So there's like, you know, that correlation. Then I was also thinking, you know, on a winemaking front where, you know, we like to change things up. You know, to get better, we like to get more creative with native ferments, or we like to get more creative extended or cold soaks or concrete, or, and that kind of goes back into the board thing as well. Like, I think if we change up boards, if we're riding a standard thruster, standard trifin all the time, we get stagnant. And none of us want to do that in winemaking either. We want to try new things. We want to get creative. We want to do coat ferments. We want to get on a single fin or get on a log or get on a, you know, and then that's when the best of the best comes out. The best surfer doesn't just surf really well on a longboard or shortboard. The best surfer can rip a old piece of junk single fin. Like, the best winemaker, a lot of people can make basic red wine, but an unreal winemaker can make like a special glass of white wine. Or, you know, where the real techniques start to come out, or the, you know, a high of a special Syrah coming out of a certain area of Paso, and you're like, whoa, I didn't even know that was capable.
And here, yeah. And regardless of condition, similar to surfing, you know, like, you know, I've surfed with a lot of pros, you know, in Indonesia or on surf trips and this and that. Like, you're out there and you can barely scrape a wave together. And if, you know, Kelly Slater's out, he makes it look like it's 10-foot pipe and it's perfect, you know, like, you're just wondering, like, where are you even getting the speed from? How are you doing this? But that's, it's a similar thing, you know, it's being well-rounded. And
hopefully we're getting better as we get older. We're probably getting worse at surfing as we get older.
Oh man, I really hope my peak is still ahead of me. I think it is.
Don't worry, you're only 40, dude.
And that's kind of, I've seen that, you know, over the, you know, to Phillip's, you know, analogy, like, even with the winemakers that have come over the last, you know, growing up here and over the last 20 years, how much the bar has been raised in the quality of wine and the quality of grape growing in Paso. It's phenomenal. And then, you know, I don't, you know, we've always known Paso capable. 30 years ago, it wasn't, the wines were good, but it wasn't where it is today. And that's influences new ideas, new, you know, techniques, and have raised the bar in what we didn't think was possible. Just like the best guy out at the crappiest windswell day at the rock, all of a sudden is mind blowing, and you're like barely scrapping for a wave.
Yeah. Yeah, and ironically, the ocean probably plays the biggest influence too for us too. You know, on vineyards and stuff. So it's a nice tie-in. You know, it's not so far fetched, Chris. You've got this 50-degree water that's a giant air conditioner, you know, for cooling off this region. So
that's right. And as what Pat is saying, and for everybody watching, is that our correlation to the ocean, so our boundaries, if you will, is limited by the San Lucia mountain range. And that mountain range basically helps to stave off overcooling influences from, say, the Pacific Ocean, especially those northwesterly winds that we typically get that are just kind of like our regular wind. But then also, it still allows a little bit of infiltration of cool air at the end of the day, especially our warm summer days, where as hot air rises and mixes with that moist cool air, it creates this fog that rolls in and out. And when that happens, that brings in these cool ocean breezes that help to cool us off. So we have this diurnal temperature swing of about 50 degrees. And it has absolutely everything to do with the Pacific Ocean that we all enjoy and make our home, basically. So thanks, Pat, for bringing that up. Hey, Pat, well, we got you. So I'm going to share the screen again. What is it that we're having here? It's a Cab Franc, and I think that's worth talking about because it comes into this whole kind of creativity and kind of different stuff out of Paso that is totally different than everything else we're tasting today.
Yeah, this was, I mean, kind of a fun wine because, and the reason I chose it was one, it's an example of Westside Bordeaux wines that are growing out here, you know, being in Willow Creek, we're a region two technically. Where we sit specifically, we're probably closer to a region three on the Winkler scale. So in the heat index, basically on a scale of 1 to 5, we're pretty much right there in the middle. Cabfranc being a cooler, you know, it leans on the cooler side of the Bordeaux family, but it does really well at our ranch. We've been growing it since 2006, and I think it's an example of, one, the ageability of the wine, and then two, like, you know, kind of what some of the expression is off the Hart Hill there. So that's just off of West 46, our winery, and this block is just to the right of our iconic grove of oaks that are in the shape of a heart. It's kind of a nice little variety. We threw a splash of Malbec in there to kind of round out the edges, and then a little bit of Cabernet Sauvignon to add a little structure. But I think it's a fantastic example of Cabernet Franc. It plays a significant role in a lot of our Bordeaux blends, and I think it has some really nice elements of like dry tannin, kind of a persistent tannin, nice black fruits and certainly good ageability with what we've seen. So it's kind of fun.
I really like this wine. When I opened it, I've got a soft spot for Cab Franc. You guys probably don't know this, but I worked in Saint-Emilion at Chateau Angelus for 3 years.
Okay.
And they make, arguably, it'd be silly to argue this, but probably one of the best Cabernet Francs on the planet. I mean, you know, the right side of Bordeaux there in Saint-Emilion, it's incredible. So I've got a bit of a love affair with Cab Franc, and I love the variety. And when I tasted this wine, I was like, this is really nice. It's got some primary fruit certainly still hanging on, despite the fact that it's now 6 years old. And complexity starting to come in. I think it's a really beautiful wine, and I've got a confession to make. So Jess went to pick up the wines, and I was just supposed to pick up a bottle of Peachy Canyon GSM on my way home from surfing at your guys' tasting room. Right. But there was another bottle of Niner Cab Franc in that bag. So I took that too.
that's why I'm drinking Malbec. I was like, gosh, I'm going to have to that's all right. I tasted this enough.
I owe you a bottle of wine.
Good stuff.
I saw it. I looked at it. I was like, 14 Cab Franc. Should I say something? No.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco is on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year. Your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank.
I knew it was you or Chris, you know? It's something.
You got one for me. I'll either let you take a set wave or you'll get a bottle of wine.
Good stuff.
So, hey, Josh, talk a little bit about the GSM then that's in here, because this is totally a first for you guys, and I'd love to hear everybody's kind of opinions on this. I think it's so cool, by the way, just real quick, everyone. We've got a GSM from Peachy Canyon, who, as Josh was saying earlier, a bit of a Zin house, but
They're going GSM, totally cool, totally personality of Paso there. Cab Franc, also a total personality of Paso, as we're also known as the Sport of the Region. And then Syrah, and just powerful, and these different expressions. You got to check out their websites and everything, and maybe get a bottle for yourselves. But this is a really neat tasting of that, that expands like this whole breadth of Paso right now.
Super different wines.
I'm gonna reuse this. I'm gonna redo this tasting someday. I can tell you already for some trade or some media. It's pretty freaking cool. Josh, about that GSM.
Real quick, yeah. So the 2018 GSM, we have 5 estate vineyards, and we have 1 in the Templeton Gap, 1 Willow Creek, 3 in the Adelaida district. And the GSM comes from the Mustang Springs Ranch, where I'm sitting at. The winery is kind of on the northern side of the Adelaida district. About 10 years ago, my brother and I, my dad, decided we wanted to go back to our roots, to the vineyard across from you, Philip. One day I'm going to come and we're going to yell back and forth from where I grew up. So I used to do that with the kids that used to live where Law is today. We used to, what are you doing?
I used to live on that hillside. I lived in that little house for a year up on the right across from the winery there.
Perfect. So we put in 30 acres of dry farm vineyard here 10 years ago, and we wanted to do some Rhones. I wanted to branch out. So we kind of built our own little Rhone Valley here, and we've got Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, kind of all wrap around each other. And this wine, it's very approachable, GSM. It's just, it just released 2 months ago, 2018. It's 69 Grenache, 22 Syrah, 9 Mourvèdre. Very approachable, very juicy, very, not a real big wine, but I like the flavor profile. I like the Grenache base. I like the Grenache notes that it's bringing to the wine. And then to be able to do, dry farm, right? I know a lot of people assume that all west side you can, but once you get to the northern edge of the Adelaide district, from where Philip is to right here, being Adelaida, his rainfall to my rainfall almost cut in half, really. I mean, we're that mountain range, kind of where Dow, we're right over from Dow. It drops a lot. We get a lot less rain. So it was tough to get these up and going, but we're super happy to be able to do something different besides Zin as well, to extend our portfolio. We're having a ton of fun. It's an acre or a ton and a half to the acre, slow yield.
That's super low, yeah.
Yeah, it's, we did it all old school, all 12 by 12, planted on a diamond. Yeah, we're having a ton of fun with it. Real fortunate to be able to bring it back to being, peachy, being 100% estate with the, the 5 ranches now. In another year, we'll be able to, in our 5th one coming online, we'll be super stoked.
Very nice. Yeah, this is fantastic. I love it's like biting into a fresh raspberry, like the raspberry, strawberry, and then the spice elements. Like that's a perfect summer wine. Like this, I take this to the beach, you just, fresh and fruity. It's spicy. It's got nice tannin and mouthfeel. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, and good tension. There's great acidity, that keeps it really nice, and it kind of accentuates those bright notes from the Grenache, being Grenache dominant. So all those red berry characteristics, and then the Syrah's got, a little bit darker, a little bit funk, it's got a little bit of those gamey notes. And then that touch of Mourvèdre with all those earthy characters. It's really pretty. I like the wine a lot.
We're having a ton of success. It's fun, when you... I did peachy for a lot of years and then did chronic and now back doing peachy again and to have done a lot of Zin over the years and to be able to change it up. It's exciting again. And I love doing Zin still, don't get me wrong. We have Zin at all 5 ranches. We're definitely having fun with that. But to be able to do something that has no Zin in it is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what you were saying about trading out, maybe riding a twin fin for a little while. Just have a little fun. Reinvent,
And these ferments, these Rhone ferments or Bordeaux ferments compared to a Zin, and
totally different.
And seeing how different, same cooperage, even with these different varietals, it's amazing how they affect the wines. Zin, can be dominated so fast, but like a Syrah or even Cab Franc that has such strong varietal characteristics that will really you can recognize compared to Zin sometimes. It's it's nice to be able to play in that world a little bit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, the wines for me up here at Law, like, we've got so much power and opulence in the wines, probably because of the, you know, the elevation as well as the fact that we get pretty tiny yields as well. But I'm always amazed at how much oak I can throw at these wines and you just don't see it. Like, I mean, some of my Syrah lots, you taste a brand new barrel, like 8 months into it or something, or, you know, a year, 18 months into aging in this barrel, and you just don't see the oak. And you're just wondering, like, are you kidding me? They just suck it up. And it's amazing. I mean, even the Grenache from the property, I think Beguiling from 18 is just over 50% new oak, which is kind of a lot of new oak for a Grenache dominant wine, but you don't see it. It just adds a little complexity, a little texture, a little different tannin profile and flavor, but it's never overbearing, and it always amazes me.
You think the tiny yields though too is probably a lot having to do with your soil profile, because it's pretty calcium rich over there.
It's pure calcareous limestone. I mean, literally, you could pick up a rock from the vineyards and draw on a chalkboard with it. You'll ruin the chalkboard, but you can definitely do it. It's and that's the other thing that I think is so amazing. You know, we all have, you know, we're in the same area, but there's so many different nooks and crannies and different terroirs, kind of like different surfboards too. I mean, our vineyards are almost pure calcareous limestone. So it's really inhospitable. The fact that we can grow anything is kind of a miracle, but it allows us to retain a lot of tension and freshness in the form of acidity in the wines. But then, you know, for you at Niner, for example, like some of those vineyards that are down towards the 46, you can just see it driving by. They're richer soils. They're darker soil.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you do so well with Cabernet and Cabernet Franc and Bordeaux varieties. From here, from Law, you can look straight across to Dow, and it's really funny, like in the summer and different seasons, you look across and you see their land and there's just this hint of red. You know, there's iron in the soils. You can see it from here, from like miles away. And that's what makes them so successful with Bordeaux varieties and Cabernet as well, because it loves that iron-rich soil. But then just a couple of hillsides over towards us, that iron is gone, and it's just snow white, you know? Okay. So that's why for us, Rhone varieties are really interesting and do, I think, a lot better. I mean, we do grow Cabernet as well, but I utilize it as a blending grape. We make a wine called Audacious that's basically Priorat-esque, you know, 30-35% Grenache, and then equal parts Carignan and Cabernet at roughly 25%, and then round it out with a touch of Syrah, and it just works beautifully. But I don't think that the Cabernet here is, you know, a Bordeaux Cabernet. It's more of a Priorat Cabernet or something like that, you know. So it's really interesting how in this one ABA, this one place that we all call home, all these things are possible. I mean, we make a Tempranillo dominant wine, you know. There's like, I get to wear 5 different hats as far as winemaking goes, which is super fun, you know?
Yeah. No, that fast change from west to east is quite amazing, both for soil, for temperature, for climate, for rainfall. It is a very diverse area, you know, and that's what makes it kind of exciting and unique. And it's fun for us, I think, you know, as winemakers and knowing Josh, you know, Philip and Chris, like having the camaraderie. It's like we still surf together, you know, you could still have that camaraderie. You go down to Swami's or someplace, you know, down south, it's packed out. It's like, no, it's every man for himself. It's not, you know, that kind of friendliness. And so it's nice to have, you know, a closer-knit community that does share information. Yeah. Ideas and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like, even though not necessarily everybody is a surfer in this town, but when it comes to a lot of the winemakers anyway, the camaraderie that winemakers share is a lot of the same kind of Central Coast camaraderie that we all share. I mean, we got on this thing, and I think the first question we all asked each other was, did you get in the water?
Like, yeah.
I think that's the first question all of us ask anyway, no matter what.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to weave in one of our surf stories, each one of us, you know, whether it's worst injury or most exotic place or, you
know. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Let's do both.
Hey, so even though, Philip, you were just talking, I do want you guys, being Josh and Pat, talk a little bit about the Law wine, actually, and what you're finding. bit. I said powerful when I was talking a little bit about the wines, but powerful and elegant and you know, yet still with this interesting kind of bright little acidity in the background that just absolutely heightens a lot of that kind of bold brashness of Syrah that wants to be like kind of in your face. The Grenache is just kind of smoothing it out and taming it. It's a very pretty wine.
I love the true, you know, even though it does have a little bit of Grenache, it does have a lot of still varietal character in that Syrah. And I don't know if you did both the Syrah and the Grenache in concrete or if it was a co-ferment in concrete, but I love, for me, fermenting in concrete, it keeps it that cool, nice, slow ferment, so you don't lose anything, you don't burn anything off. You have a nice, you know, it really, that's one thing I always go to. Like, it allows me to maintain the varietal, and then trying to, I mean, it's that blueberry and those dark, varied fruits that Syrah has, they come right through, and the power is there, but like you said, the elegance, but then I enjoy the little bit of age, but it's an age that still is not, it hasn't lost anything. It's just kind of just come around more.
I agree. I mean, this wine's like, the hallmarks for great wines are wines that evolve and they just continue to unfold in front of you. And this is a wine that is showing those characteristics. It's like, you know, you have this little anise and nice quality to it. And then underlying there's the warm oak tones. But what I've most appreciated, I opened this about an hour ago because I knew, I was like, I bet this wine is going to unfold. And so I've been watching it for, you know, about an hour now. And it really has. I mean, it just continues to evolve. It continues to change. Like in human years, it's probably 20 years old. You know, it's still got a lot of life in it and will, I'm sure, mature beautifully. So I'm going to enjoy this over the next couple of days. That's always what I like to do with a nice wine like has good aging qualities, and I'll drink this over the next 2-3 days if I can keep it away from my wife, and just go for it.
Fruit is just because
if I duck, you know, you gotta know why.
That this was 63% new, I'd be like, yeah, right. Like, no way.
That's what I was saying earlier. Right? Yeah, 63% new oak on that one, and. Since it's mainly Syrah, that New York portion is mainly barrels, because we age the Syrah in barrels, Burgundy barrels, so 228s. And the impact of new oak there is much greater than a puncheon at 500 liters. So I'd say out of those 60-odd percent new oak, at least like 95% of that is barrels. And pretty high impact barrels. I like Francois Frère and Hermitage and Gillet and the Rousseau barrels for the Syrah. So they're not, you know, soft barrels. They're pretty high impact, and it just eats it up.
Awesome.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah, yesterday when on our practice session, I mentioned the word barrels, and Pat instantly was like, barrels? Oh, I want to get barreled. I was like, no, man, barrels.
always trying to hunt those down.
Yeah. Pretty elusive sometimes on the Central Coast. You got to get lucky.
It is.
Yeah.
It's funny. I went to school in Santa Barbara. I was at UC Santa Barbara. I studied microbiology, but I was there 4 years. Probably, again, no offense to my wife, but some of the best years as far as the undomesticated years. It was, you know, putting wet seats on in your dorm room and running out to the point, and, you know, and then running to class and doing that for 4 years and surfing all the right point breaks there in Santa Barbara is pretty awesome. A different world from Central Coast.
But it's so close. I mean, I make it down to Surf Rincon at least 3 or 4 times a year whenever it's on. It's 1 hour. Well, if you're speeding, it's just under 2 hours, right? So you're there like that. Pretty cool. True. So
too busy for my blood, man.
That's the thing. That's what I was going to mention. That's what makes the Central Coast so appealing to me as a surfer is the crowds, or lack thereof.
Yeah, come on, we're talking to surfer. Don't tell anybody.
I don't know who's watching. Sorry.
Never did.
Well, we've got lots of really big fish and really cold water.
Yeah.
I think that, that keeps
we do.
Away.
This is, we do. That's, and that's not embellishing the truth at all. We do have really big fish here.
Yeah. I actually just, this would have been like just over 3 weeks ago, the weekend before my son was born, I surfed Hazards and it was really fun. And I came in and literally 15 minutes later, a friend of mine came in as I was changing. He's like, I've been surfing here my whole life. I've never seen that before. I was like, what? He's like, solid 8 foot great white just went right underneath me on my way back out. But the funny thing is he paddled back out. He talked to all the people out in the water. He's like, oh yeah, I just saw a big great white. And they're like, you sure? It's like, yeah, like clear as day right underneath me. I mean, big, it's 8 foot. That's a juvenile really, but
most dangerous.
No one went in. Everyone just stayed out.
Yeah, that's when you count how many people are out and you go, all right, my odds 1 in 15. All right, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. I'll do this.
I think I'll stay out. Come on, wait.
Yeah. Well, Josh, you've been serving here pretty much all your life. They're here. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. And they're definitely, you know, even when I was a kid, you know, I used to sleep under the bridge at Arroyo Laguna my whole, you know, before I could drive. Okay. Mom would drop me off over there and my two buddies, and we'd stay all weekend. To drop us off Friday after school, pick us up Sunday night. And that was before the elephant seal colonies moved down. You know, it didn't seem as bad. Obviously, as I've gotten older, I just have not been as much denial as I was as a kid. Yeah, they're definitely here. The hardest part now is that having kids that surf, and you know, and I get a wave, I'm surfing with them, and I'm far away, and you know, and there's that moment like there's nothing I can do right now. You know, if something happens, they're far out there, way down the beach or whatever, and that still gets me a little bit eerie.
Yeah.
And, you know, for some reason I used to mind surfing alone as much, but now as I've gotten older, like I try to kind of look for somebody early in the morning. Like
it's eerie.
Anybody?
I don't like surfing here by myself. It's just you need one other guy. You know, that's
at least
you rock up alone and it's perfect. You're kind of like yes. No,
hey, come on, somebody.
Yeah. When we moved here, my wife made me promise I wouldn't surf by myself anymore because I think we were here a month and somebody got snapped. And it's like,
yeah, I had to make the same promise to my wife and my mom.
Right.
I broke it once or twice. But
I still see my buddy Kevin Swanson, who got hit at Sandspit a couple years ago. And I saw him last weekend. I'm like, if Kevin's out, then I have nothing to worry about. Like,
what are the odds for him getting bit twice? So hang out right next to him, you know?
That's right. That's right. I don't know if you guys know Kyle Knapp down at Stoltman, but he's a buddy. And
yeah,
I'm out.
It's crazy, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, we have a question, by the way. So, Philip, for you, the barrel types, could you rattle those off one more time?
I work with 11 different cooperages, probably because 11 is my lucky number. Oh, I don't know, that's probably a lie. But it really depends on the varieties that I work with. So I've got different barrels that I like to use for different varieties. And for me, my philosophy is really, you know, the more I understand the vineyards, the more I understand the blocks and the different clones of Syrah and the different aspects that we have in the vineyards, I'm really trying hard every single year to match the cooperages that I think match those varieties or those clones best. So, you know, if I take notes on these wines every single year, and every single year clone 470 Syrah, I prefer Hermitage to Dami, I'm going to stop using Dami eventually, you know? So I'm really trying to fine tune those cooperages that I really think match the varieties and clones best. But for me, the biggest ones I'd say are Boop, Rousseau, Hermitage, François Frère. And then for the Bordeaux program, I use exclusively Tarasso, Sylvan, and Danajou. And then I use a little bit of Dami, a little bit of Gilet. Who am I missing? Atelier. I like a little bit of Atelier. But it's funny. I love their barrels, but Atelier is known for producing really light impact barrels. They're known for steam bending, and you know the house blend is really kind of a light toast. And it's weird. I'm probably the only person that does this, but I order Tancé specific forest barrels from them. which is completely outside of their portfolio, Firebent Heavy Toast. So they probably look at me every year and go like, this isn't what we're all about. But I'm like, well, that's the barrels that I like from you. So there you go. But yeah, that's pretty much the ones that I work with mainly.
I'm going to interrupt you really quick here because we are starting to run a little low on time here. But I will say, though, is that you can see how detailed they get about board. And Pat still has to talk. But they get detailed about boards. Imagine how detailed they are about wines, right? And, you know, pick times and pH and bricks and all of those types of things. Anything with numbers. We're typically obsessed with it. Well, we are getting up to the end here, if you can believe it or not. Guys, thanks so much. It's been a fun little conversation. I totally dig this kind of stuff. I wish I could maybe, you know, incorporate this all the time. Right on, you guys. Thanks so much for being part of this hangout. I appreciate it.
Cheers.
Right on. See ya. See you in the water.
See you guys.
Later.
This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt-Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, sláinte!